Welcome all to most latest edition of Radio Tipping Point. And as you know, I try to make this journey as interesting for all parties concerned, including myself. And like all journeys, they're much more meaningful if you are able to bring a few guests along. Well, in this particular case, it's much more than just a guest. We are talking about a true collaboration that's going to take place, truly exploratory, because this will be comprising a number of sessions that we'll be doing together. And so we open this door, not really quite sure what's going to take place, but we feel very confident that that journey will bring so much meaning in a way that we could not say in advance. And that's the true spirit of life. And with that, Robbie, I'm very proud and honored that you joined me on this journey together. And perhaps to get us started, if you can talk a little bit about yourself, who you are, and perhaps some of your motivations on taking this journey together with me.
I am Rabia, and a kid which was born in Turkey with a diverse background of the families, which were coming from the immigrant families, and with some different cultures that are also including love and respect towards nature, because my family also has some shamanic backgrounds. And it gave me lots of inspiration. And this is how I grew up by the time. So the way that I see nature is kind of my family member. It's kind of a whole thing. It's kind of a journey that we share all together. Afterwards, me and my family, we traveled a lot to different parts of the world, including Central Asia, Europe, Balkans. And there was something that I felt when I was a kid. We all are connected somehow. There is no difference between each other, but not only for the human beings, for all the members of the ecosystem. And this experience in the future, I had no idea how it could lead my path to the future. When we came back to Turkey, I studied on linguistics, and I also did my master's and PhD fieldwork on linguistics and endangered languages. And this is the point where I said, wait a second, something is wrong with this. I am here making my fieldwork, talking all those native speakers of this language, which is not being spoken by the young generations. But the only cause is not only the number of the people, the population that speaks, the geographical conditions, the politics. There is something else. It is the environment that we are losing. We are losing the words. We are losing our traditions. We are losing our name of the plants that we use, which are giving us this little clues about what are their medicinal properties, for example. When I noticed that, I said, okay, like, who will read my PhD? Who will read my articles? I used to work as a research assistant at the university back then. And I was also having this chat with the businesses close to the university, like everybody who visited Istanbul, most probably they know the Grand Bazaar, you know, that area, very historical. And they were always telling me something. You are visiting us. You are spending time with us as an academician. But we have no idea what you are doing under those closed doors in your castle. At the same time, you are teaching our kids there. You are being funded by organizations for your researches. What is our benefit as society from your experience, from your work? That really touched my heart. And I noticed, oh my God, like, who will read my articles seriously if I talk about, okay, the etymology of the world or birth or the journey of the words? Is it really what exactly we need at this moment? And I noticed, no, I mean, we are losing the languages, which is related to species, which is related to cultures, food, you know, which is related to everything, actually, for a reason. So I decided, like, I did my Erasmus in Germany, in Johannes Gutenberg Uni. I came back to Turkey and I said, okay, something is wrong. And I decided to change my field. I am also a permaculture designer. I am also a sustainability consultant. I said, okay, let's start with the kids first. Let's train them, because training kids means training the families. So I start to teach kids English via permaculture practices. In the garden, live and learn model. And they were amazing about it. Like, I saw how humankind has this big interest and curiosity for nature. Then slowly, after the classes we had with the kids, pandemic started, the kids couldn't come. And, you know, the kids cannot concentrate online very long time. It wasn't being effective anymore. It was kind of being burden on the shoulders for them, because all their lessons were also online. And, you know, in the communication with the children, you need to have this face-to-face thing, you know, sincerity. They need to feel it. Feel your excitement first, because they are learning also the emotions via your expressions. Then me and my partner, we found this little shop during the pandemics and we started a cheesecake business. Yeah, I know it sounds weird. Am I a baker? I didn't know that I was a baker. And I was born as a baker, but apparently I was. And I said, okay, whatever we do should be sustainable. So we came up with this question. Is it possible to create a business model that would be sustainable both financially, sociologically, and also, of course, environmentally? So cheesecake was just an instrument for us, because we could only deliver takeaways back then, you know. It was just a 4 square meter little shop. And we started to do our zero waste neighborhood project by inspiring people about where does your food come from? And where is your food going afterwards? And it's really interesting, since this is a radio station in Austria. One of our community members, Sarah, I really miss her, by the way. I couldn't communicate her yet, but she was from Austria. She was an Erasmus student back then. She was one of the first community member of ours, because the municipality wasn't collecting the organic waste. So imagine you came from Europe to a country and you have no idea what will you do with your fruit scraps. And you're struggling because it's a habit for you. So it started with the international students first. And then slowly the community grew. Meanwhile, we were getting supplied by farmers. So we decided to build this chain and organic relationship between the consumer and the producer, which is also related to element cycles. And our business grew. We had the second shop. The community grew. We had more people, elderly, kids. We started to measure our impact by using this compost cart thing, the organic waste that we collected. We start to create new products from the waste, which was the second phase of our project for circular economy.
Rabi, thank you very much for your description. There were so many thoughts that went through my mind while you were talking about all these different realizations that you went through and the different stops that you took on that your own personal journey. But there was one that immediately struck out to me. Well, you know, very, very often when we talk about extinction, we're always talking about plants or animals or something physical, but we never look at extinction on a cultural level. But you started talking about that. That was precisely your point. And I raised the question to you, to what degree, when we look at extinction on a physical level, how does it look different when we're talking about cultural extinction? Because at the end, we're always looking for that that indigenous wisdom that we have, that you would hope that is never really lost, but we seem to keep going through the same exercise over and over again to innovate, quote unquote. Whereas in essence, very often we're borrowing elements from previous cultures. You mentioned permaculture as being one of your focus, and there's a complaint that's very often made about permaculture coming from middle-aged white guys, whereas the actual ideas to be found within permaculture are very much tied to what you were referring to in nature. These are just natural rhythms that are being viewed, being acknowledged, and being utilized. And so I'd be curious, I know that was a mouthful from my end, but I would be keen on your approach towards this idea of cultural extinction, because that was very, very much a part of what your studies were about, and how all these other parts kind of fall within the general framework.
Well, I will just give you an example from a name of a plant that we all know. It is called Salvia officinalis, which is commonly we know it as sage. When we think about this Latin word Salvia, I mean, I think most of our listeners, they speak, of course, an Indo-European language, which is also related to Latin. Salvia is a word that is related to salvation. When you see a plant that is named as Salvia, what would you think about that plant? What is its function? Most probably, it is keeping you safe from some things and you feel more relaxed, you know, like the idea of salvation. Well, it's an antibacterial plant.
Perhaps if I could jump in and give you some of my thoughts when I think about when we use such words, specifically looking at this concept of salvation, it is resilient. Resilience is the first word that comes to mind. That hope is the second one that comes to mind, that there's always hope, because we know of salvation. Renewal, obviously, is a word that we know from religion. And And I think that when we concentrate on such words, it allows for us to change our perspective, the way that we actually look at things. And so that is a very interesting perspective. But I just thought I would throw that in. I hope I didn't ruin your flow.
No, it was great because that also shows our cultural perspective and background. Because I don't come from Christian culture. I don't know about, the salvation, what it means to you is not the same meaning, obviously not for me. So you see, we see the plant in different ways. So when you lose that plant, so it's an antibacterial plant. We use it as smudge or incense in the for negative energy cleansing, you know, also in the church back then. Why? It's hidden in its name. What about Turkish language? We call it island tea. Adachaya. It gives you an idea about our climate, which means we have islands, and this plant grows there. It gives you an idea. We drink it as a tea. See? So it gives you the main function even. You won't name a poisonous plant as tea, right? So it gives you the idea that you can drink it. It's good for culinary usage. It's not poisonous. It gives you this little hint about that plant. So what happens if that plant dies? If we lose that plant, we would lose most probably 3 minutes of this talk. And it's not only that. We would lose the wisdom of our ancestors. I wouldn't know that I can drink it as a tea if I would have seen the last member of this extincting species. I wouldn't know. My kids wouldn't know. This is how it is related. You lose the culture at the same time with this. You lose the words. You lose your language. The languages die. Those cultures are dying at the same time. So one species. When that one species die, we lose all our cultures. Maybe not me, but somebody, some tribes, some cultures, some people on the other side of the world, they are losing a lot, which will affect us. Because we are all connected through this mycelium web, which is nowadays we call World Wide Web. And I believe that's really good inspirational connection between these two terminology, mycelium web and World Wide Web. We are all connected. We see it like through all the social media and everything. When they lose, we lose. Because we call it circular economy, but the most important thing, we have a circular ecology and we are part of it. We are not the boss of it. So imagine like your hands, if your hands won't function, obviously the other parts of your body would work more, you know, like maybe you work with your feet, but it cannot 100% be your hands. And you lose something. We are an entire ecosystem. And I believe that this is the main basic mistake that we are making about ecology. We are all together making a whole ecosystem, like the theory of Gaia, you know. And a good example of it is another species that are facing extinction right now. Do you have any idea what could that be?
Ooh, There are so many, I'm not even sure where we start.
Human body. I will give you a hint. There is something in human body that is we are losing.
My immediate thought would be our minds, but I'm sure that's not what you meant. I think that we are losing our immune system because of the way that we reach towards plug-and-play solutions that perform a workaround around the natural immune system that we have in our body. I'm not sure if you were thinking of that one, but I think that's one we're definitely losing.
And who helps us to build our immune system? There is something called second brain in our body.
Okay.
Intestines.
Mm-hmm.
So, gut bacteria.
Right.
We never think about their existence. But I'm so glad for my shiny skin to all those little microorganisms who are walking on my face. So I am Gaia by myself because there are thousands, billions of things living on me. And we work together. If they are not okay, I'm not okay. If I lose the balance of them, I won't be okay. And there is this, I don't know if everybody knows that there is something called, I will change the word, humanure archaeologist. So there are some archaeologists who are focusing on the fossils of human poop or poop in general in past centuries. There's this research made with the ancient poop of the planet. And guess what? Yeah, we have no idea how many of those bacteria we have lost. And they will not come back again. And today we are seeing that everybody is intolerant. Like people have several diseases and allergies, such as celiac disease, such as gluten intolerance. This is not only related on the our way of agriculture and food systems. It's also related of the nature itself and being aware of ourselves first, knowing our ecosystem. Then you see, like, it is the analogy of microcosmos and like mini cosmos, let's say. And if we look at ourselves, we will understand that ecosystem outside is also inside of me. And when I lose something there, I lose something here. If I lose a plant that my ancestors used to eat for ages as food, maybe in the fiber of this plant, there was this special component who helped my intestines to digest better and who was also supporting the growth of the specific bacteria. I don't know. When I lose that plant, I lose my health. When I lose, like when we lose the sharks, we will lose our carbon sinks. Like it will, you know, when we lose one species, it causes the entire culture loss. It causes immigration. Because like when you lose your culture, what would you do? What is your bond between your land, your home, and you? When you lose your bond, there will be no attachment. You lose the names of the plants, names of the animals. You lose the idioms which are related to those.
Yes, the you talked earlier about this relation to nature, and this is a subject that I talk about quite often in the show, and our estrangement to nature, and especially looking at it from the primarily the Anglo-Saxon world and everything that took place over the last 400 years, with the idea that we are, and we see this today, especially in Austria. We'll be broadcasting the show on the 17th. And one of the reasons why we are taping this in advance is because of the problems that we have tied to the flooding, that we are not able to do this live. Thank goodness we were able to be inventive and come up with a solution. But the problem that we have as human beings very often is the inability to accept nature. And when I say accepting nature, it means that we do not try to manage it. We understand that we need, that we not only do we need to live with nature, but I hope that people come to the realization that we are part of nature. We should not separate ourselves from nature. And it's because of that separation. And I think the example that you were giving tied to the biomes that we are able to use from other people or from ourselves as a healing method is a very good example. And it's quite interesting that science is finally coming to this conclusion. But to break it down to its most basic element is this idea that we have estranged ourselves from nature because we feel that we need to control nature, although that's a complete illusion, and we're reminded of that daily. So I'd be curious from your perspective, the connection between this cultural extinction that is very much coming from not only the physical world, from losing plants and animals and whatever living beings we might have on this planet, insects, et cetera, the extinction of people, I'm referring to the customs and the rituals that we have, because this is a collection of knowledge. And I believe this was your motivation in studying what you study, because when nobody speaks these languages anymore, it dies. It dies. And that means that all that knowledge that was which was collected throughout all the ages disappears like this. And I'd be curious to on your opinion in this connection between this cultural extinction, our viewpoint towards nature, and the path that you've taken.
Great question.
It was a big one, I know.
Yeah. When you said about dying languages, maybe most of the people or academicians won't find this professional, but I would love to ask a question to our audience. We describe language as a living thing. And when our babies are born, we celebrate, right? We watch them how they grow. We watch them how they study, how they develop themselves, how they learn how to eat, how curious they are about the new things, how they will have their own babies. And there is a certain point of the life that it ends and they will have funeral. I'm wondering how many funerals have been made for the languages that are dead now. We need to do the funerals. How many funerals have we organized for the species that are gone? Because there is also a psychological background of it. When we lose something, we are grieving. And when we cannot process this, we cannot process this grieving time well and together with the others, it is causing us traumas, which will cause in the future intergenerational traumas, which will cause the situation of the world to become like this. Because this is also about empathy. Most of the time as linguists, we say, okay, our job is not saving the language because you cannot do that. It is a culture of some people. They decide it. Willingly, unwillingly, no matter what are the factors that are pushing those people to lose their language. But when you work with a language for a long time, it is impossible to not create a bond because it's a living thing. It's like, imagine you have pet and gone. How would you feel? You will have the grieving. You need to have, like, we have feelings. Yep.
Can I ask you a question? How would that funeral look like when we say goodbye to, it's much more than just a language. We're talking about a culture, because once the language is gone, the culture is gone. So in your mind, what would that funeral look like?
I will give you a life example. A couple of days ago, my parents came to say goodbye to us because we are planning to leave. And there are some food that my grandma just taught me. And she's gone now. And my mom cannot cook them or bake them. And my partner told, like, oh, if you cook that food, the specific food that my grandma used to bake, it won't look like a proper dinner, you know. And I said, but my dad would be really happy because I don't know when was the last time that he has eaten that. Anyways, he convinced me. And we made this dinner with several dishes, you know. And I said, like, I will tell my dad what my idea was. And I told him, because, like, my grandparents also immigrated, like, there are not much people who are doing these things. You cannot go to any shop and find it. You need to find those specific people who share the similar culture, similar, who follow the similar immigration base to come till here, who have the same past, same history, same suffers, you know, because when you eat that, you taste all those, you taste all your memories, you taste your childhood, you taste. And I told my dad, like, I was planning to do this. Most probably you haven't eaten it for such a long time. And he started to cry. So this is how we lose a dish. Because with that dish, we are losing our memories. We are losing our childhood. We are losing our connections. Because back then, we didn't have internet. We didn't have all these Facebook and stuff. And imagine you just open your plate, sit in the park, and you eat that dish, which is part of a culture, part of the stories. And there will be another person who is passing by. And when that person will see that dish, will know who you are. Maybe you share a lot in common. Eat with the same dish. It happened to me, by the way. I had this friend, one of my best friends. I know her parents and stuff, but I never knew, you know, like when you immigrate from somewhere to somewhere and it happens for the generations, sometimes you don't like, and we don't ask. I mean, it's a personal thing, according to me, and some people do not prefer to share it. She one day, she came to visit us. Oh, it was after a funeral, actually. She came to visit us. And our traditions, like during the funeral, people bring to you food. And in most of the world, it is like that because, you know, you're grieving, you cannot cook something, you have guests and so on. She made that food, you know. When I lost my mother-in-law, that was the food that she brought to us. And I said, like, is it this one? She said, yes. And I said, how can you know it? Where are you originally from? And it appears to be that our families passed in time in Bulgaria. We're living in the same village. Just by that food. You see how much we lose. We lose our families. We lose our friends by the time. Who knows, like, maybe my grandfather sat in a under a tree with her grandfather. And maybe they were the best friends. We lose our stories. And losing our stories makes us to lose our communication skills, our ability to create new words, our ability to create new dishes, our ability to create new products in terms of circular economy. Because there is this wisdom and we don't see them right now, right? And we are trying to find ways like, oh, product development, what should we produce? I have this in my hand. Well, why don't we just ask to indigenous cultures? Why don't we just ask to our grandmas? Because I'm sure that they have an idea. So, like, this also, the relationship between culture and environmental issues and economy and product development, sustainability, has brought me to the point that we are just rediscovering things they were mostly discovered before.
You've been obviously thinking about a lot of this that you were talking about today. You've been thinking about it for a long, long time. And when we think about things for a long time, we might lament in how things are going. We might be very sad in how things have developed. But I'd like to go back to the idea or the concept, the suggestion you made tied to sage earlier, and you were talking about salvation. We as human beings have this need to figure out ways to move forward, right? And it was very indicative with the word that you chose, with salvation. So perhaps if you could share with us that path in your mind, how do we turn this one around?
Embracing the diversity. That would be the first thing. Embracing our past. Making peace with it. But I'm going to quote a poem from 13th century Sufi poet. He says, science is about knowing the science. science is. It's not only the science, by the way. Like, wisdom is knowing the science. Wisdom is knowing yourself. If you don't know yourself, what kind of literacy is that? So we need to know ourselves, know our place. We need to see that the diversity has brought us till here. We need to embrace different people, different cultures, different species, different everything, because there are these little hints about the solutions when we do this. And it brings us to the topic of biomimicry. Planes are biomimicry today. If we want to do something, if we want to invent something, I mean, you know, even about the dreams, I will talk about psychology. We cannot, I'm not talking about the spiritual way, but in the psychological aspect, we cannot see things that we haven't seen before in our dreams. Well, we cannot get inspired with total darkness. We can only get inspired by the environment we are in. We can only inspired by nature, inspired by our friends, inspired by our network, you know, but the things that exist around us. So we are losing all our inspiration. Now, most of the companies, they are talking about innovation, right? As a social scientist who jumped into environmental sciences later on, but I did my high school about sciences, math and physics and chemistry and biology, by the way. I chose this topic on purpose, linguistics. How we use our inspiration is also related when we come to today with this global network of innovation, funding, grants, ventures, you know, sustainability, tech companies and everything. I just want to ask, both as a social scientist and a scientist, how we can get inspired for innovation if we don't have all these social sciences, if we don't have our language, if we don't get inspired by this nature. Without inspiration, there is no innovation for us. So we need to change also our venture funding and grant systems, actually, because we have a philosophy. This needs first a philosophy, not only the regulations and restrictions. This is about our approach to nature. It's about how we feel about it and where is our place. It's about environmental ethics. It is, I mean, like, the best innovation for me is the language of Jules Verne. If we wouldn't have that language, we wouldn't get inspired by him and we wouldn't have lots of things that he theoretically invented back then. It's important. We need to change this. We need to change our perspective in general.
Full agreement. And maybe just some thoughts from my end based on what you just mentioned, Rabia. We know from a scientific perspective what homogeneity, what it actually brings to us, because that means that we lose all that resistance. We leave ourselves open to an attack that we are not able to defend ourselves from anymore. And I'm not referring it necessarily as a war, but rather the attack comes from in different ways. Could be a verbal attack. It could be being ostracized. And I think you know a little bit about both of them. And so the idea is that you have all kinds of means at your disposal, and that is only to be found within a heterogeneous environment. And as far as our estrangement from nature and our estrangement why we do things, I would even take it to that level. And the reason for our relationship to each other and obviously to nature, that requires a mindset change, and we need to figure out ways to show the importance to others and to convince them that we need to change the path that we're following, right? And so I would be curious, because of all those things that you've been doing, especially tied to not only education, but mobilizing people to do things that they didn't realize they could do, because that was the big message that I got from you based on our conversations and primarily what you mentioned. How can we use some of these methods that you've been talking about as a means to change the way that people see things, and with that being the motivation for us to take a different path? I know that's a challenge.
Yeah. And I need to think about it. How? Well, my first thought would be, we shouldn't waste our talents. And we are doing it pretty often recently.
Full agreement.
I will come to the immigration issues at this point. I know it's tough. I mean, we are territorial animals at a certain level. And we believe that our resources are not enough. But we also know that using your resources effectively, it would be enough. Why? Because nothing has changed about the amount of the water that has existed in this planet billions of years ago and today. Nothing has changed about the amount of nitrogen. Nothing has changed about the amount of carbon. It was always the same. What does that say to us? Everything is made out of these components. Our food, fossil fuels, energy, our books, you know, it's almost the same thing with the barley. Let's see it in this way. And we are, as human being, we are the biggest carbon sink walking on the soil. Once upon a time, they were mammoths, dinosaurs. Today, it's us. So, there are, like, let's not get worried about our resources, first of all. That is number one. Number two is, you know, it takes a village. We always say it for different stuff. It took a village for us to break all these element cycle. Ages. And actually, we had this conversation before with you in private about the Industrial Revolution, about the Aristoteles, you know, like how we came to this point. We came to this point by breaking the element cycles, with my words, by forcefully displacing the elements. Well, there are organizations who are working with forced displacement issues, but only for humans. It should be also for the elements, I believe, because we follow the elements, actually, and elements follow us because we are the carbon sink. We have enough resources. First, we need to wake up and see ourselves as carbon sink. Also as nitrogen sink, also as iron sink, you know? Because look at the elements in our body. We even have a little bit amount of gold. So the nature is us. We are the nature. It's the same with the fish. It's the same with everything, actually. It's the same with viruses. Like, I believe that we wouldn't be that scared if we would scared of viruses if we would know who we are. I'm talking about wisdom. Nothing is here without a reason. There is a chain, like we are working together like a big machine. And I don't agree about resisting and defend terms that you have used. It reminded me of the movie called Annihilation. That movie made me feel, you know, like grounded, actually, when you embrace and you become the nature itself in different ways. I know it's a small philosophical aspect of it, but it is, we think that it is not, we cannot apply this. Well, it's really easy to apply it, actually. It took a village for us to come to this day. It will take a village to change it. And we are still, in Turkish, we say, a topic that doesn't feel the seeds of a fig. We are still talking about that kind of topics. And we are putting all our energy on it. But what about let's become the entire fig and talk about that topic? Because it is not about the environment. It will save itself. Like, let's talk. We are not saving the world or something. It is our world. It is us. I mean, the dinosaurs wouldn't care about saving the world. They extinct. Nothing happened with the planet. We will
extinct. That's a very important point. Yeah. Sure. There was very... Obviously, you brought up a number of very important points, but I started to come to the realization with this idea that we feel that we need to save something is actually probably the most counterproductive approach we could ever take. And what my takeaway from that of what you were talking about, not apart from the fact of that this idea of what I call system thinking and the relationship between all these components, but the necessity and the advantages to be found within self-sufficiency. And when I'm talking about self-sufficiency, I'm not talking about the individual. I'm talking about the cumulative and understanding the idea of being heterogeneous. Going back to the point that you mentioned tied to the attributes and the talents that each one can bring, and why we need to tap into all of this energy. And I love the point that you raised about the resources, that we keep complaining about not having enough resource. Whereas when I listen to you, I hear the message, the problem isn't the amount of resources. The problem is in the way that we use them. That's the problem. And if we were able to take more of a frugal, my words, if we were able to take a more frugal mindset and utilize those things that we have to its optimum, then the situation more or less corrects itself. That was the message that I received from you, Rabia, and for that, I'm very, very thankful.
I want to talk about carbon sinks and fossil fuels and human relationship and how we can do the balance in the future. I'm going to take a note because that wasn't on our list.
No, that's great. And that proves the point that we're looking at this very emergent. And in fact, we really are, because you got me thinking about a few things. And on the one side, it's only the reconfirmation of those things that I knew were true. But you allowed for me to look at things from a slightly different perspective. And that was really beautiful. And for me, that's the ability that we have in uncovering some of the knowledge that is innate in us, but it's an entire process, and how we make that knowledge visible to us, visible to others, and we make it meaningful. So it's a great example of how that actually takes place, right? Well, Robbie, I can't wait to move forward with our journey. And thank you very much for your time, and hope that those that joined us for this 57 minutes were able to pick up some of the energy of that, what we're talking about, find some added value and that was being discussed. And I would hope that you would come up with some inspiration to come up with your own thoughts and perhaps maybe see what you can do to make a difference. And we both feel that you can. So with that, Robbie, thanks again. Thanks a million. And we will be back very soon with the next edition of our journey. Thanks again.
Thank you, too. And thanks to our audience for listening to us. I hope that it was inspirational for them.